Val and I are so grateful to be here. Really, really excited. And I think it was 1976. I was in a CFO camp in Sussex, in England. And Cliff Custer and Ruth Stapleton Carter were there, and they inspired me to... I was sitting up a tree in... I think it was meditation time for me, and I was sitting in a tree and just thinking, one day I would like to do what they're doing. And so here I am. And just want to read something from Thomas Troward, who was a judge in the British, during the British Empire in India. I hate that phrase, British Empire, but I'm using it for the moment. Because it seems to really apply to CFO and CFO speaking leaders in particular. It is a matter of personal, talking about the spiritual life, it is a matter of personal experience which no one can convey to another. All we can do is point out the direction in which this experience can be found. The experience itself is the operation of definite vital functions of the inner being, and no one but ourselves can do our living for us. When I was 18, in a Baptist church, a little Baptist church in Essex, and unlike now, I can find a few words to say, but back then I was very, very shy, very introverted, and I wanted to be, in my heart, I really wanted to be baptized, and it was a very public thing, and it, for someone that's introverted, it was a terrifying thing, really, and we had to say something, and I didn't really understand the Bible too much back then, and I wanted to find something that was relevant to me, and the Psalms really were the only thing that I understood as an 18-year-old. They were the only things I could get hold of and understand, really, and then I came across this verse in Psalm 27. When my father and mother abandon me, then the Lord will look after me. And because when I was two, I went into a care home. My family home was a domestic violence situation. And so myself and my two brothers were taken into care. And so from the age of two to the age of 15, I was in care homes. And it wasn't until I was 15 that... coming out of the care home, and it's a strange thing to sort of think about now, but back then, as a 15-year-old walking out of these gates, it would feel like coming out of prison, really, and a sense of freedom, but also a sense of, I'm on my own. As a 15-year-old, what do I now do? Who am I? And so on. And but at school, the only thing I was useful at school was soccer. That was the only thing that I was interested in. I just looked out the window in every lesson. Was no interest at all in the lessons, but just looking out of the playing field and imagining myself out there kicking a ball. And every lunchtime, eat my dinner as quickly as possible and kick the ball. So soccer was something that really was my joy. I mean, just all that, you know, depressing time for me, it was my joy. And I left school, I was leaving school in the October, and in December, and the sports master said to me, Alan, would you like to come and play for my soccer team? Now, I was 6 foot as a 15-year-old, and I was very angry and very aggressive. So I could have, I was quite comfortable with being on a football pitch, a soccer pitch with men. So, and he knew that. So he asked me, and I said yes. And I joined that soccer team. And at the, I'm a 15-year-old, and there was a 35-year-old called Bert Curley in that same soccer team. So, and that's how Bert and I met, and I'll say more about that, about his influence on my life, really, a bit later on. I don't know whether in the bookstore you've got any books by Walter C. Lanyon, but in the Shasta bookstore, I did manage to get hold of, and Walter C. Lanyon was an inspiration for Glenn Clark. He's one of his favourite people that he inspired him and he read. And being aware that I was adopted by God was something very powerful for me. And I read this from Walter C. Lanyon. The invitation to become as a little child also carries with it the necessity of parents. And we know that the father-mother power of the universe of God broods constantly over its creation. The father-mother power of the universe of God broods constantly over its creation. And as a 15-year-old, I met Bert, and Bert was down the youth club, running a youth club, and down that same youth club was Ian, sitting in the front here. He was a 13-year-old at the time. And also, there was a 13-year-old girl at the time who I fell in love with at that time, and she's sitting here now, Val. 46 years married, and actually 50 years seems to be quite relevant this week because it's 50 years since we started going out together. But just wanted to share some of these stories, really, where God has actually been brooding over Alan. And when I became aware of it and was able to receive, and I think this is such an important spiritual lesson, that it's our capacity to receive that we need to be aware of. The more spaces we make open inside ourselves, the more we can receive from God. Because God is love and always wanting to give love to us. But I think if there's one problem in the world today, and it's been ever since it began really, is not enough love. Really, still not enough love. How many millions of people claim their various religious belief systems, and yet still not enough love, too much darkness going on, not enough light. So it really is my passion to actually be more and more light within myself, create more and more empty spaces so that they can be filled by God. Because God will not intrude. The spiritual, you can tell spirituality by the fact that it does not intrude and it does not invade. And it cannot come from the outside. And you cannot borrow it from anyone else. It's on your inside or it's nowhere. You need to find it on your inside. And Walter C. Lanyon goes on to say, and since the material father and mother are but reflections of the divine father and mother qualities, we can expect not only the protection of this principle, but can demand it. And believe me, I have a very demanding daughter who, even at 30 years of age, thinks nothing of, Dad, have you got? Dad, have you got? Dad, have you got? You know, and always... she lives in the same road as us, so if it's not her, it's one of her children. Granddad, have you got? You know. So, it's, but that's really how we should be with God. This is what I need right now. Have you got? So we can throw ourselves unreservedly on the principle, taking the attitude of complete faith and trust, as does a child. For your father knows you have need of these things before you ask. And my first prayer that I ever prayed with any significance, because I grew up in a village in Oxfordshire initially before I came to East London at 10 years of age. But from the age of 2 to the age of 10, I was in this little village in Oxfordshire, and it was a little Anglican church. And we were hoisted into the choir very quickly, 6 years of age, 7 years of age. So really been in church all that time, going way back. And even back then, it was not something that impressed me that much, to be honest. And I used to imagine the organ pipes as javelins that I could, you know, sitting there and pull them off the wall and throw them as far as I could and things like that, just as a boy. And I remember once me and my friend, we took comics, penny comics or whatever, inside the hymn book and sat there reading them, you know, during the sermon and things like that. So just because it had no interest for us. But when I was 15... I needed to find somewhere to live. And usually when you came out of the system, the institutional system, you went into a hostel somewhere in London, a Blackheath in London. So all the boys would go off to this hostel in London. And I thought, I've had enough of institutions. And I think what I would really encourage the younger people here to think about is, as soon as possible, listen to your own voice. Listen to your voice. Listen to what's going on inside you. Older ones as well, but when you're younger, you don't often get your voice listened to. So you listen to that inner voice as soon as you can and obey it. So playing soccer in this team with Bert, there was a man who heard that I'd got nowhere to live, and he said, well, you can come and live with us, with our family. And so I went to live with them, and it didn't work out. After a few months, I was just very moody. It's difficult. Well, I suppose I'm moody. Not moody. I'm quiet, mostly. But more introvert than extrovert. But even then it was, I guess we didn't diagnose depression in England back then. You weren't allowed to have depression if you were young. If adolescents weren't allowed to have depression. So there was no such thing as diagnosing a depressed adolescent. But I was clearly very depressed, and I came into this very happy family home. Two teenage daughters, 15-year-old boy. They laughed a lot, I didn't. It wasn't going to go down very well, really. And so after a few months, they asked me to leave. And it was the most devastating thing at that time that I could ever think of to happen to me, because I was alone, and now I'd found a family. And now they were saying, actually, after a few months, this is not working out. So Bert Curley, he introduced us to lots of choruses, and just like Jack, really, he would just be there beaming at you. And there was this one chorus, which some of you might know, but it was just, if you want joy, wonderful joy, if you want joy. And Bert would sing it with that beaming smile on his face, his lit up face, would sing this song. And it somehow touched my depression somewhere. Now I can articulate that more now. But somehow that smiling, that shining face, this absolute belief in joy. And Ian and Val and Bert both had that shining, they've got lovely laughs and smiles. And the significance of those three people, really, Ian ended up being best man at our wedding, and Val obviously ended up being the bride at the wedding. And Bert was a mentor. But I could look back now and say, actually, those three people were so significant to me because they knew how to smile. And then you had to laugh. Then you knew what joy was. I didn't know what joy was. And so sometimes we do have to borrow until we can find it and believe in it for ourselves. And then we have to find our own joy. But what happened is that when I was so, this particular night, when I was so devastated by the news that I had to go from this family home, that I just looked up in the sky, looked out the window, looked up in the sky. And Bert had been talking about there being a God out there and a personal God and so on, but I took some convincing, really. So I just said, whoever you are, whatever you are out there, I need help now. I need help now. 3 days later, a car pulled up down the bottom of a road, and I was walking along some shops, by the shops, and this car pulled up, wound the window down and said, are you Alan? And I said, yes. He said, well, my name's Bert. He said, my son tells me, this is another Bert. He said, my son tells me you've got nowhere to live. He said, well, you have now, jump in. My wife doesn't know, I'll tell her when we get home. So, and can you imagine that actually, now I look back and I think this 15-year-old boy in the universe is sending his voice out there in the ether. Will anybody or anything respond to that voice? And 3 days later, that happens. And I had many stories of that kind of thing, but I just want to encourage you young people particularly to put your voice out there in the ether and see what comes back. And we are never too old also to keep putting our voice out there in the ether and seeing what comes back for us. Casting our bread on the waters, and see what happens. So I learnt really from that age. Sorry, just want to finish off that in that house, the home that I was didn't fit too well in, Val was the 13-year-old daughter in that home. And were her parents embarrassed that I turned up every Friday? For whatever reason, they didn't really know. I guess they might have guessed why I kept running around to see, just to spend 10 minutes in the home, just to be there with Val. But, and it was probably 2 years later, I think, before we, Val was 15, I was 17, before we started going out. But yeah, so even those despairing situations can be revisited and be transformed. You know, treasure can be found in what seem to be negative situations. for us. So another thing to think about. So we can throw ourselves unreservedly on this principle, taking the attitude of complete faith and trust, as does a child. For your Father knows you have need of these things before you ask. We always keep a supply of nappies and wipes and all sorts of things down our house, because before too long, somebody's going to be running down the road to say, have you got any nappies for our youngest grandchild and so on. And what's wonderful to me, again, is to look back to say that that 15-year-old boy on his own felt very alone and very isolated, alone on the planet. And yet now I not only have Val and three lovely children, we now have 10 grandchildren. And so that abundance that God brings to us and never stops giving to us, and you know, if only we would ask. And why are we satisfied? Why do we limit? We limit, don't we? Think, just give me enough. And actually inside us is this gold mine. I'll be talking about that later on, but this gold mine, a treasure inside us. But we're just satisfied with just enough. And because of that, we don't have enough for others. But if we would claim more for ourselves, we would be able to give more to others than we do. If God be for us, who can be against us? And when God was, I realized that God was now for me. I knew there was a God, and I knew that God was for me. It had a sense of, it's very strange to explain, really, that the blessings of growing up without parents. Because I trained as a therapist a few years ago, and the importance of parenthood and, you know, good parents and be the best parents you can be, because that will give your children the best start and so on. But forgive me if I state that I think parenting is overrated. I think too much is put on that, really. And when I realized that I had no parental voices in my head, growing up as a child, I was just one of a number of 22 children. You know, so from the age of 2 to 10, I was one of 22. So if you didn't cause any way, make any waves or whatever, you could just get on. You could just play. With no parental voice saying, how did you get on to school today? Did you get, you know, high marks? Did you get this? Did you get... Nobody asked me. You know, so I had no voices. Nobody saying you need to measure up to this particular standard or do what I say or think what I think. And so maybe that explains why I'm, in my thinking, a free thinker. Because I had nobody to actually say, don't think this or don't think that. And then I was blessed by having someone like Bert Curley come along in my life as an adolescent, where I could, Bert would say, well, Alan, you know, what do you think? Not I'm telling you. What do you think? And so I could think, and I'm still thinking. And I'm still arriving, and I'm still unfolding to myself. And don't ever think that you know yourselves. Of course you don't know yourselves. You only know a part of yourself. You know that part of yourself that you have trust, I'll trust that part of myself. But we're all like icebergs, with two-thirds of us unrevealed to us. And there's so much more in all of us than we're aware of. And there's so much fear that keeps it down. It's fear that stops us exploring ourselves. We want to keep ourselves safe and secure, not trusting the fact that the everlasting arms will always hold us. And I love the synchronicity of CFO. And I'm finishing with the line, with the everlasting arms catch us when we fall. And the first song, Leaning on the Everlasting Arms. And I'd never met Jack before. I prepared these talks a few months ago. Yeah, but this, so during the week, look out for this. Oh, I haven't got a lip on here. Okay. Used to be, but it's gone. Okay. But look out and be open. I know most of you that are very experienced CFOs, this is telling you something you may already be aware of. But it's everything's brand new. This week will be brand new for you, if you let it be brand new. I know a lot of you have been before, and you've been here 40 years, 50 years. That's irrelevant. That has no meaning. It's only now that has the meaning. These now moments where we can experience God in another way, and another way, and another way. So we can experience God, and I love the whole of the program. I love the fact that, although Denby, you know, very painfully for this introverted boy that's still inside me. I mean, I'm 67, but inside me is still this 15-year-old boy. Parts of him are still there, this introverted boy. And Denby tries to get me doing foolish things in rhythms and so on. And if I can use my knee as an excuse, which is a bit shattered, and if I can, then I will, but, you know. But I'm a total believer in the wholeness of us. And actually, I only found out a few months ago that the word holy comes from the Anglo-Saxon word hool, H-O-O-L, which means wholeness and health. The whole person. CFO is about the whole person. It's about the emotional you, the psychological you, the physical you. The spirit you is fine. That's the perfect part of you. And that's the part that needs to affect the other parts of us. And so we are spiritual beings who need to make whole our mental life, our emotional life. That's the and our physical life. We are meant to be whole. That's what holy means. We're meant to be whole people who can help others to become whole. And I love the fact that after Ian and I, when we used to lead the service and do the speaking back in the Baptist church, because they were, you know, barely supporting themselves standing up, most of them, weren't they? Really bless them. But and so young people who were fired up with God were a godsend to that little church, really. So Ian and I, as teenagers, we would lead the service and do the speaking back then. And 1966, the time of Billy Graham coming over to England and Wembley Stadium, and so we saw ourselves as I saw myself as Billy Graham, Ian Moore, Cliff Barrows, I guess, on the music side. But we saw ourselves as twins going around the world, doing the preaching and all those things, until we found our own journey. And Ian foolishly fell in love with Denby, and he came over here. But so those plans went out the window. But that sense of finding out who we are. And I think that it would be great this week if you discovered more of who you are. How many of us have grown up with other people telling us who we are? And us telling our children who they are. And deciding for our children who they should be. And how they should be. And I remember once, it was a church service, and one of my sons, we had twin boys. How wonderful is that, that this 15-year-old boy, the first gift from God when he gets married is twin boys? You know, somebody that desired to have his own. It's very difficult to explain growing up without a family unit and then actually having your own family unit. And there they were, the four of us, instantaneously. There was a family of four. And the blessings of God go on like that. And then 13 years on, we had a beautiful daughter, Louise, who's certainly never let me ever forget that she's on the planet. One way or another, she reminds me that she's arrived. And yes. Okay. So, this brooding presence. I loved the meditation this morning. It's just beautiful, because what it did for me was just remind me again of the brooding presence of God, of this loving presence that is saying, are you well? Alan, are you happy? Are you happy now? You weren't happy then, but are you happy now? And I have had this, you know, I call it unique because it's the only one I know, this relationship with God that is about Alan and God and that fathering and mothering that he and she have done for me, really. And that's the only spirituality I know. I don't know any other kind. I only know that relationship. I've only grown up with that as a 15-year-old. So when somebody says to me, God is this and God is that, I think, is he? Is she? I don't experience it. Not for me. Not for me. Never felt judged. Always felt loved. Always felt held by the everlasting arms. Always heard this voice. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. Always that encouragement. That ever-flowing love that always goes on giving to me, and it's just been my capacity to receive it or reject it that's been the problem. And so I really do want to encourage you to think about who God has been for you. Not what's up in your head and what he's supposed to be for you, but what has he been for you? What has she been for you? The father, mother, brooding presence. And when one of our sons was, can you imagine the joy that when these twins were born? And strangely enough, they were 21 inches long. The same as Ian Denby's grandson, Ian. And the joy that was there was amazing for me. And I couldn't, it's very hard to explain that sometimes when you see someone looks quite serious, they might just be their exterior. But for me, on the inside, the joy was leaping up and down, but I could never really show it on the outside. And even now, if you want to leap around in square dance, and that's fine, but you may not see Alan doing that. But it's still the joy that was there. And then when our children were two, we discovered that one of them had a problem with the kidneys, and then were told that there were stones in the kidney, and that after tests, they would have to remove the kidney. And I went through, this was my first major challenge, really, from this 15-year-old coming to through to, I was 27 then, maybe 26, 27. And, you know, I was a deacon in the church, everything was going well, you know, I felt really things were on course. And then this came along in my life. And the surgeon, he had these, he was about 6'4" and he had these huge hands on operating on this 2-year-old baby, a 2-year-old. And he managed after a 5-hour operation to remove every, what they did was they kept going back and doing x-rays and found another little bit of a stone, and they would then, this patient loving man just after 5 hours managed to remove every single stone and fragments of a stone from the kidney. He said, well, actually we've saved the kidney. And then I went with my son. I still remember walking down the road, holding his hand as we went for checkups and so on. And when he was about 4 years of age, the same surgeon said to me, well, of course, you do realize he will eventually lose the kidney because it won't grow the same as the other one. And that's when Alan really discovered what prayer was and the power of prayer, because I just made a declaration that said, that is not happening. There is a no, and I'll be talking, one of my talks is entitled, Let Your Yes Be Yes and Your No Be No. I'll come to that at the point. But I discovered what prayer was and the power of prayer in the power of no. What is not acceptable to God. And anything that is not health is not acceptable to God. Anything that is not love is not acceptable to God. And so I just felt that my son was made to be perfect. And his body is meant to be perfect. And his body will be perfect. And I will not accept this situation. And I want to talk to you later in the week about the power of the I am. And be very careful when you use those words, I am. There's power in those two words. So when I said, I am, I didn't know that back then, but just as intuitive, I am not accepting this situation. I didn't ask God to change anything. I just drew on the God within me. I am not accepting this situation. And I was lining up with the power of God, because God doesn't accept situations that are less than perfect. We are meant to be perfect. Jesus said that, be ye perfect. In modern language, you say, be whole, be a whole person. Be a complete person. Be a perfect person. Not in behavior, as we were taught when we were 15, and hell, and I still see that, I still hear sometimes those, who feel the flames of that hell that they used to preach us about, Ian. Do you remember that? And that's a wonderful thing, you know. One thing that I would, Bert was a mentor for me for a while, but he realized that Alan will always be Alan. And Bert would never try and clone anybody, never try and mold someone. He would just say, well, you be who you are, and I'll be who I am. And for me, when I decided that I was not accepting something that was not acceptable, in the same way that I work with people now that are very vulnerable, as a therapist, I find that there are so many people who actually have just not had enough love in their lives. That's really the, it, never mind all the kind of theory and personality disorders and all the kind of diagnosis that we do in this modern day and age. It's actually just about not enough love that produces these conditions. Just not enough love. And so my son now, just to finish the story, because sometimes Val says to me, Alan, you never finish the stories. You start off and you go off somewhere. But I'm hearing a voice. That is a voice that I hear in my head. Anyway, sorry. And he's 44 in August, this August, and still has both his kidneys. So sometimes we don't have to pray for hours. We just sometimes need to make a declaration. And that declaration gets heard. Just the same as when Alan prayed. Is there something out there? I need help, and I need it now. And help came. I didn't have to keep praying. I didn't have to spend hours. Sometimes it's just, yes, please, whatever you've got, I need it now. And I do see it as this, I don't know why they're little old men, but that's in my imagination. I see these little old men with wheelbarrows in the ether. And these wheelbarrows are full of goods for us, presents for us, for each of us. And every time we have a negative thought, they stop. And when we release that negative thought, they start bringing it towards us. And how often our prayers are like this, where we pray for something and ask for something, and we forget, and we negate our belief. Jesus said, be it unto you as you believe. And actually, you'll be very surprised how inconsistent you are with your thinking. How we desire something one day and we've forgotten. And we've forgotten the intensity of which we prayed. And then when something arrives, we think, oh, where did that come from? And we disconnect it from our prayer, maybe 5 years ago. We've moved on. But God always hears, always listens. And before you call, I will answer. So why do we need to speak? I was so tempted to go into the silent prayer group. Really? But decided not to, but was tempted because I know before I call, I'll get answered. So what's the point of calling? Really? Because it's about being in the presence. That's all. If you're in the presence, then you don't need to ask for anything. And I just want to finish really with this thought. When Jesus said, when you pray, go into the inner room and shut the door. So I find, I'm quite happy to say this to you, first time at Winnie, that I find being in group prayer difficult. Because when I pray, I go in my inner room and shut the door, which means it's got nothing to do with the rest of you. Has it? Really? So, but in that room, we go in, and some of us know how to do that. We go in the inner room and we shut the door. We shut all the sights and sounds out. And hopefully we shut all the negative thoughts out. Because as Glenn Clark has so wisely said so many times, that when we have fear, when we have negativity, then that blocks the power of prayer. Because It is something. I will tell you this silly story because it's just coming to my head. So it's silly because boys can be very silly. And in the Lake District in England, when I was about 13, we went up to this beautiful place in the Lake District. And the streams in the Lake District, like any mountain streams, are really, really cold. But us boys, we're 13, 14 years of age and thinking, well, what's cold? You know, we stripped down to our underpants, we got in the stream, absolutely frozen. And what we tried to do, which is the silly part of what boys do, is we tried to block the stream. We got rocks down and we tried to try to stop this flowing stream just because we could, which is the egotistical state of mankind on the planet, particularly men, really, that we do things because we can, rather than they're the right things to do. And so as boys, we did manage to block the stream, and so excited about it, we blocked the stream. And now as Alan, I'm in the business of unblocking the stream in me and thinking about what blocks, and what blocks the stream in us is fear. And I think the World Health Organization say by 2020, the second biggest killer on the planet will be depression. And that leads me on to the last talk on Friday about let your light so shine. But just to think about that, there is so much darkness still on this planet because there's not enough light. So just wanted to forget where I was in terms of the story now. I've gone off somewhere, but that's okay. So I just want to leave you with these questions, really. Trust in the Lord always is very familiar to you, probably, as a trust in the Lord always. Always. That means in every moment. So when a fearful thought comes in, you know, when a negative thought comes in, when an unloving thought comes in, you are not trusting. Yeah? So trusting is about the moment by moment. You know, the lovely line that just comes to my mind, you know, from a hymn, moment by moment we're kept in his love. And moment by moment is when we're meant to live in the presence of God. And Brother Lawrence, in his wonderful book, Practicing the Presence of God, we're meant to practice the presence of God and live in the presence of God. And then we don't, if we're living in the presence, that's where I was going. Thank you. The inner room. When we shut the door and we're in that room, we start asking God for things. And suddenly it occurred to me once, and this little voice of God saying to me, Alan, why don't you just switch the light on? So I reached up and switched the light on. And everything that I was asking for was in this room. And he said, it's all yours. Take it off the wall, whatever it is you need. Take it out the fridge, whatever it is you need. There's some clothes there hanging on the wall for you if you need that. It's all in your inner room. Once you're in that inner room, first thing to do is to think about putting the light on and see what's there. In the dark, you're asking for all these things, but when you're lit up on the inside, you start to see what's there, and then actually you don't need to ask for very much at all. So, trust in the Lord always. I want you to ask this question for yourself. Can God be trusted? Because if you say yes, does your yes mean yes? And I will come on to that at another talk. But I really want you to think about that. Do you trust God? Have you trusted God? Do you trust God right now for whatever's going on in your life right now? Can you trust? As Walter Lanyon says, can we throw ourselves unreservedly on this divine, unseen presence? Will the everlasting arms catch us when we fall? We can all be leaping up and down singing songs when circumstances in our life are going great. When they're not going so great, it's difficult, isn't it? Difficult to still at those points trust God. And I'll be saying more about those difficult times when the only choice we have is to trust God. And does God come through on those occasions? Okay, thank you.